All right, we are back. We are here with Auction Talk. Nick, every week we get to this point and it feels like we're just here. So many topics. We're going to dive in, talk about cards, talk about sports, do what we always do. But first, how are you doing? We had some good weather in the Midwest. Mm-hmm. Are you feeling good about life right now?
I feel great, man. It's a mood game changer when the weather's nice. We were talking about it before. When you have kids and you can get them outside as much as possible, it's like a whole mood changer for the entire household. So grateful for these last three super nice days. And then in the Midwest, who knows what the weather is going to be like tomorrow. So you got to capitalize on those nice ones.
You do. I'm expecting maybe in a day or so where I'll maybe get down to the end of my block and get to the point where I'm just immediately sweating through my shirt, which I can't stand. So when it's like 60 degrees and perfect with little humidity, you got to maximize that because we only get like maybe a couple weeks of that. That's about it.
For real. And you, so you're a runner, right?
Yes.
Would you rather run in the like 110 degree with humidity, like weather, or the like, you know, single digit cold weather? What would you rather run in?
Single digit cold weather all day.
No hesitation.
People think I'm crazy, but I always find if you, and runners out there, you know, you can recognize, I always find if you have the right gear and you get going, it really doesn't matter as much. So there's nothing to combat the feeling that you, it feels like when you're on like mile two going into mile three, that you just like start feel like someone's suffocating you. And I like, we invested in, let's just say thank you, hashtag thank you sports cards. We invested in a treadmill and we're building out a basement gym, which I've never had in my life. But it's nice because the elements of the Midwest are so one way or the other that I am happy now that I'm getting old. I won't reach this point where I like need to go outside and get it in the morning, but then look at the humidity. It'll be nice to have an alternative. Although running on a treadmill sucks, but I'm glad. I'd rather do that, I guess, than feel like I'm going to die in some of these brutal summer months.
Yeah, that makes sense. And the home gym's a game changer when you have kids, because you can work out on a whim if you need to, or you can, you know, squeeze something in that you might not be able to squeeze in outside on those days that are tough to work out. So that's a game changer. We had a little something in our basement too, you know, just for those days when it's like, I don't have time to get to the gym, but I want to do something. So
I was going to ask you, and which we're going to dive into this episode, but maybe before we dive into the episode, we're talking about, I know you're a gym guy. We talked about your walks, getting your lift in. I think for me, part of the reason too, why I try to get the workouts in, because I like to, you know, especially on the weekend, maybe eat something a little unhealthy here or there. We've all got our vices. What is your like big vice? Like, what is the food that you like jump all over and you can't get enough of, even though you know it's absolutely terrible for you?
It's without a doubt, it's pizza. I'm a grease guy. I'm like a pizza. like a huge nasty burger. I like sweets, but it's not like what I crave. I'm like a grease guy, but it's usually pizza for me. And we have to be pretty tight with our diet here, because I think I mentioned it before, my oldest has a lot of sensitivity. So we don't get to splurge often, but when we do, it's like some type of pizza. We're super cheap now, so it's usually like a mid-range frozen pizza, but it does the job for me. What about you? What's yours?
I've never met a pizza that I didn't like. I love a good burger. I think like my ultimate, and it's always been this way, like we're making people hungry on a Thursday as they're listening to this, but I love wings, man. I love wings. I love really good wings. Fortunate in Indy, I'll shout them out, Chatham Tap, Ale Emporium. We've got like, I try wings everywhere I go, but we've got like two really, really solid places to get like some of my favorite wings. So I could just like, the draft is coming up, right? And well, we've got the WNBA draft tonight, which maybe we'll talk about here. Yep. But we've got the NFL draft coming up, I think a week from Thursday. And I've like the text thread with my buddies, like it's like the one weekday event where I like hang out with my friends a year And so I'm hosting this year and everyone's already like debating, like, where are we getting wings from? So yeah, wings all day. Give me the blue cheese. I can do the ranch too. I'll do it all. Light me up.
I love wings, man. My thing with wings is I feel like I can never get enough when I eat wings. Like I'm be 24 deep and I'm like, where I'm still hungry. Like keep them coming. And I always feel like a slob when I eat wings, but
yes. Yeah. Flats or drummies? What are you picking?
I like a mixture of both. I like to kind of guess each bite. Like, how am I going to eat this wing? Because this, I mean, I eat each one differently. Like there's a strategy behind each style of wing. So
is there a particular style you prefer?
Like flavor wise or
you mean flavor or? Flavor or how they're cooked?
Yeah. I mean, drummies are probably the easiest, like the most efficient to eat for me. That's one of the weaknesses of where I live. There's only like 40,000 people here. There's not a great wing place. Like it's like Buffalo Wild Wings. It's like chain wings.
I can do it. I can still do it.
And that's what we do. And I love the garlic parmesan, but I usually get a variety of, you know, a little bit of spice. And then I usually get like a good barbecue and then like a garlic parmesan. What about you?
I like to crank up the heat a little bit. So I'm always like, if there's a hotter option, give it to me. Buffalo style is preferred. The Ale Emporium here, which I referenced, shout out to all you indie listeners. You already know what I'm talking about. They've got Hermanaki wings, which are like this dry rub. The way they're cooked it's so good. And man, I'm getting like really hungry. And I know my wife already has dinner. Like I'm cooking the meatballs tonight. That's what we're doing. We got a little pasta going on, but I don't think I'm going to be able to wait 10 days for wings. I'm going to need them sooner after all this.
Yeah. You might have to get like a mediator wings, you know, just to kind of hold you over a gap filler.
Yes. Well, maybe we will moonlight. I hope you enjoyed. We moved from auction talk to junk food talk for a minute. Maybe we'll build in the weekly segment because I know all you sports card degenerates love your junk food just as much as us. But I wanted to start here because I think we're in the business of creating fun topics. And while I just asked you, what is your one favorite junk food? I would be curious if you could only collect one set product or parallel for the next year, what would you pick and why?
Yeah, I saw that question. That was a good one. It got me thinking. I wanted to go with something that I don't collect right now. And I want it, like, I'm a football guy. Like I like 90s football, early 2000s football is kind of my era. So I wanted to get something from there. I thought about the important years that I think are important. And I settled on 98. You got Peyton's rookie year, Moss's rookie year. And plus you have all the legends. We're still active. Jerry Rice, Barry Sanders last playing year. You got Marino, Elway, Favre, all those guys. So I didn't want to go with the easy answer in the card we talked about a lot, which would have been the 98 Bowman's Best Atomic Refractor. We've talked about it too much. That's a great choice. I went with the 98 Ultra Platinum Medallions. I think that'd be a super fun parallel to collect from the 98 year. And I think there's some value to be had because sets are usually carried by the rookies in that set. And obviously you have Peyton Manning and Randy Moss. They both have two platinum medallions from that year. They have there was a series one and series two. I think the first like 225 or 250 cards were series one. And then the next 200 were series two. And Moss and Manning had their college uniform ones in the series one. And then their pro uniforms ones in the series two. So it's like, it's a huge checklist. There's like 425 or 450 cards. So it'd be a tough one to collect. But once you get through those, like, top five most expensive guys, it shouldn't be like a crazy expensive set, I wouldn't think.
I'm visualizing the Manning cards, and you've got the one in the Vols uniform, and then you've got the one that looks like a kind of a high school glamour shots. That's correct, right?
Looks like varsity blues or something.
I've just seen the Manning stuff. Uh-huh. Is the Randy Moss similar to that, or is the Manning just atypical?
No, I'm pretty sure Moss is. I think one, he's catching a pass, and one, it looks like he's running. It's weird because I'm visioning it in my head, and I see like three different years of platinum medallion in my head. So I'd have to look that up, but I'm pretty sure they're more like action shots from Moss. I don't know what happened there with the Peyton.
Yeah, it's definitely I like the card. Certainly would love the card, but. It's kind of a funny card in and of itself.
his Rubies is that way too, where it's like him without a helmet on, he's like sitting down for a photo. Maybe he just had like a senior photo shoot, senior year photo shoot, and just used that for all of his cards for 98.
I love it. Sometimes I don't think about the questions myself as I'm like preparing them, but as I'm talking about them and thinking about the current state of where I'm at with my collecting, maybe it's because I just like wrote an article about it, but I might select for like a 1 year period. I might select like just generally just say, I'm going to just buy nothing but super fractors this year, but be loyal to my lanes and not just buy any super fractor, but buy super fractors of the guys that I collect. And I feel like if I did that, it would make me approach collecting cards and being on the hunt. It would intensify that, and it would like limit me buying cards that I didn't keep for a while. And if I came out on the other side of that year with like one or just two cards, I think those one or those two cards would be cards that would be in my collection for a very, very long time. So I might, and super fractors are great, right? They're great cards. So I might choose super fractors just because I think it might help me limit some of the unnecessary buying that I can get into here and there.
Yeah, that's probably the answer I should have chosen, because I'm the guy that like, I'm not patient enough to chase cards that like rarely surface. Like I love to be actively buying, you know what I mean? Like I've tried this so many times. I always come back to like, man, I just need to like refocus and trim down what I'm looking for. And then a month or two later, I'm like, I haven't bought anything. I need to buy something. And then I splurge, and it's always stuff I don't even love. And then I end up selling it. It's like this ongoing cycle, but that would be the smart move.
Dude, I have to, I like last night I have gotten, I'll pat myself on the back. I've gotten so much better at not buying cards that I just didn't absolutely need. Like I'm actually pretty proud of myself, but like last night, for instance, kids were in bed. I had my laptop next to me. I was getting some work done. And then I was like, I don't have any cards on my list that I'm after in the weekly auction, but should I just open it up and see what's going on? And I was like, don't open it up and see what's going on. Because when that crunch time happens, like that's when I might be most inclined, if I don't already have a list of cards that I need, to go buy something aimlessly, just because there are so many freaking cool cards that end on Sunday night, every Sunday night. So yes, it took a little bit of self-discipline to be like, don't look at it right now. You looked at it once, you made your rounds, you don't need anything. Like, don't, if you open it up now, you're going to think you need something, which I guess is kind of the point of how weekly auctions work.
Yes. That's willpower though, man. I'm proud of you for that. That's probably the best thing about doing consignments, is like I get to see so many cool cards. It kind of scratches that itch for me a little bit, without me like buying everything and then figuring out if I even like it or not. And then my newsletter too. Like I sometimes purposely pick cards from my newsletter that I really want, so that I don't buy them, because like I don't want to put cards in my newsletter that I'm going to be bidding on. But at least like I said, it kind of scratches that itch. At least I get to talk about the card if I'm not going to buy it, you know.
What 100%. And yeah, so maybe we get back into what happened last night. Let's maybe do a quick recap. What happened with Worf's auctions at PWC Weekly?
Yeah, so we sold 80 cards, up from last week. We did $54,462 on those 80 cards. The five cards we talked about, we had the 2016 Brady Select Gold out of 10, PSA 10. It was the concourse level. It did $2,880, which was down like $400 from a copy that sold in January, which again, we've talked about this many times. Like when it's an out of 10 card and two copies, especially two PSA 10 copies, sell within a few months of each other, like the second copy is almost always going to do less than the first. But the more I talked about that card, the more I liked it. I think it's a sneaky, good card to hold long term, but with so many, you know, rare Brady non-rookie parallels, it's hard to really know which ones are going to, you know, kind of stand the test of time. So we will see. But the 2013 Kawhi Select Gold out of 10, PSA 10, did $990, down quite a bit from its August sale. But, August 2022, Kawhi stuff was close to a peak around that time, probably, you know, starting to come down from the peak. But $990 made sense for where we are today with Kawhi. The 2003 Breeze, Drew Breeze, Finest Gold X-Fractor PSA 10 did $234. The Finest Gold out of 50 BGS 9.5 actually sold last night on eBay too, which is always cool when two kind of similar cards sell at the same time. I feel like that's like the best measure for current market. The gold out of 50 BGS 9.5 did 205. So that makes sense because the X-Fractor's out of 175. It was a PSA 10, so it sold for like $25 more. Always interesting to see kind of where those comp out. The 98 MJ, the game warm-up out of 230, it was a PSA 8. It sold for $1,320. That card sold in the PSA 8 in June, and it was a single color patch. This was a two color patch. The single color did $750 in June. And then the Gronk, the rookie ticket, or the rookie ink, Contenders rookie ink PSA 9 did $360, which was up from the $210 sale in January.
Maybe talking about the Kawhi for a second, I'm curious, and this isn't about Kawhi specifically or that card specifically, but maybe the state of where we are at with cards and auctions and what you're seeing. I'm curious, like, it seemed like, you know, yesterday where the conversation was about, which we're going to talk about it, I'm sure, in this episode, the conversation was like, okay, the playoffs are happening starting this week in basketball. Let's send all of our cards in because these players are going to be in the playoffs. And the demand for these players, because they're in the playoffs, are going to be up. And so now is a good time to try to get rid of our cards. Well, like in the Kawhi example you just said there, like, not so much. And it just feels like generally, like, there's been some ice poured on that notion just based on how the market operates. Like, that is just like completely without me digging into card ladder, without any evidence. It just feels like we've moved a little bit away from that period of time. Is that what you're seeing? I'm not feeling like the same type of momentum with cards and playoffs and basketball specifically as we had, you know, 2 years ago or even a year ago.
Yeah, 100%. And I think it's because, I mean, people have just kind of wisened up to the cycles, and there's more people playing that game. So, you know, when you have so many people doing the same thing, like, it kind of ruins the supply demand situation. So really it's like NBA playoffs, the real opportunities, and it's kind of the same, like, going into a season or going into the NFL season. It's like, you really want to look, like, honestly, a guy like Kawhi is a great buy right now because nobody's talking about him and nobody's like, he's down a lot. And honestly, Kawhi specifically, we don't even know how much he's going to play. Like, he's kind of always, he's not even guaranteed to play in the playoffs right now as of today, but they're a four seed and they're like third in the betting odds to win the championship. So, like, it feels like a super low risk, high reward play. Now, if you're going to buy like Tatum or Jokic, who are the two favorites, like, they have to win the whole thing for you to make any money. If Kawhi makes it to the Western Conference Finals or the championship, like, there could probably be some times in the playoffs where you could make some money. So it's really about, like, for me, it's really about looking at those guys that less people are talking about but are still great players and could make a run, rather than like, okay, everybody thinks Jokic is going to win, let's all sell our Jokic cards right now, flood the market, they all sell for less, and everybody's confused.
I'm thinking about Kawhi. If Kawhi were to win a championship this year, I've never thought about this, so maybe you can help me. I'm thinking about LeBron, right? You've got the Cavs, Heat, and the Lakers championships on three teams. If Kawhi were to win it again, he'd have a championship on his third team. Has there been anybody else off the top of your head?
I don't think so, that have had three, and then finals MVP too. Kawhi won finals MVP in both of his, and LeBron did as well, I think, on three different teams. I hope so. But I'm trying to think, and I don't think there would be on three different teams. Two, it, for sure.
It feels like maybe with Kevin Durant, maybe with Kawhi Leonard, it feels like we are living in this period of time, and we've lived in this period for quite some time, where we've got players like Durant and Leonard who literally in any other era would be the top guy. And it's weird because of LeBron, Steph, these guys who are all-time greats aren't necessarily, it's like they've got fans and obviously like they're great players and they get recognition, but just feels like maybe from a hobby perspective specifically, like these are the guys who maybe should be getting more recognition and more collectors than they should. And I don't know if it's qualities of like people, maybe not, they're like Kawhi super quiet. He keeps to himself. Durant is Durant. I don't know, but I think that's an interesting thing, especially as we're thinking about this era of basketball players and basketball cards and collecting.
It is interesting to think about. And those two specifically, like Kawhi and Durant, you like when you bring in the social media component, like how exposed these athletes are, like how easy it is to access them and just like hear them talk and hear their opinions. And Kawhi is on one end of the spectrum who like you never see. And it's almost like you don't see him enough so people don't get excited. And then Durant's almost on the other end of the spectrum where like people get annoyed when he talks for whatever reason. They hate what he has to say and they wish he would talk less. And that's probably hurt his collectability for some. I'm not saying it should. So that's super interesting. And then the fact that they've both moved around teams quite a bit in a short span. And then like the teams they're on now, they haven't won. You know, they've been on for a while now. Durant hasn't been on the Suns for a while, but he's been on two teams since he won a championship and hasn't, you know, won anything with those teams. But again, if you're taking the long-term approach, I think they're guys that are going to be remembered, you know, 10 years from now for sure for what they did in their career as a whole.
So I think about, as you were talking to that, I think about this idea of no recent comps and these cards selling. Cards that sell every month or so kind of go down in value. It like, and I couldn't think about the parallels with like players and players switching teams as well. Do you think that players who stay on the same team for the like a long haul or maybe jump to another team at the end of their career, maybe like one jump, like are more collectible based on the elements at play than a player like, you know, a KD who's jumped around quite a bit in his career? Do you think that's a thing or not?
100%. I definitely do. Like, because I mean, I think of the guys before the LeBron era, like the big guys. I mean, Shaq jumped around a little bit and he's still very collectible. I'm trying to think of guys that would kind of break that rule.
I'm a Reggie Miller guy. He stayed with his team his entire career.
Yeah. I mean, Jordan, you know, bought a team and then played for it, which is kind of sick. But people think of him as a Chicago Bull. Think of, you know, Patrick Ewing, like you said, kind of hit another team late in his career. Gary Payton was one of those dudes. I think he played for the Lakers a year or two at the end. Karl Malone, like all these guys. It was really not until the 2000s that these dudes started jumping around. So I do think that impacts thing because, you know, naturally you're going to use, like, if I'm a Chicago Bulls fan and I'm a diehard Chicago Bulls fan, I probably don't have many or any Jordan cards in the Wizards uniform. So now take that times three or four with a guy like KD or Kawhi, it's like a Raptors title doesn't do anything for me as a Spurs fan. You know what I mean? So it makes sense. And, I hope we start to see less of it. Like, I think these things are going to go in cycles where people change teams so much that then the cool thing to do is going to be to stay with the same team for your whole career. And it makes me think like a guy like Giannis, like, I mean, seems like he has a decent shot at staying with the Bucks, you know, for most of his career. Like a guy like Jokic, I don't see him ever playing for another team. So maybe we'll see that with this next cycle of players after LeBron and the Currys and those guys start to retire here in the next, you know, several years.
That's the one guy I wanted to spotlight. You mentioned him at the end, is Steph Curry. Okay. Yeah. So you have greatest shooter of all time, greatest warrior of all time. I can't, out of anybody in the league, I can't imagine Steph Curry on another team wearing another jersey. And I know if you're a Warriors fan listening to this, you're like, oh my gosh, it's unthinkable. Don't even speak it into existence. I don't think it's going to happen. But I think about Steph being Steph and all those years with the Warriors and all the success and all the moments and all the shooting. I'm just like, something about him being in the Bay for that whole period of time and watching the growth in one jersey with all the championships, like there is a tie with collectability. Like Steph Curry is so collectible for so many reasons, but I think one of those factors that needs to be put into consideration is just the fact that he's never left the team that brought him in.
And he built that dynasty. Like he didn't like inherit a good team and just like keep it rolling. Like he put the Warriors on the map. Like all their success they had, most of it was from the Curry era. So yeah, I agree with that 100%. And I think that's why he's more likable in general. I think if he would have ever changed teams or let alone done it twice, people would think of him differently. Even if he's the exact same human being, they would think of him differently for doing that. So I think that's a great point.
I know I'm a kind of a simpleton when it comes to this, but I'm looking at the plans and I'm like, let's get Steph Curry in the playoffs. Who doesn't want to watch Steph Curry in the playoffs? I know the Warriors haven't been, they've had their issues, but like it's the playoffs. Let's see Steph Curry shoot the basketball.
Yeah. You know, as a Nuggets fan, I would not mind if Curry was not in the playoffs, but it's like, I want the Pelicans and I want the Kings. I do not want the Lakers and I do not want the Warriors.
Because we're
gonna,
funny.
Yeah, the Nuggets play the, you know, if the Lakers win that play-in game, they're going to play the Lakers in the first round, which was the Western Conference Finals last year.
That's insane. Yeah. More on the playoffs in a bit. One thing I wanted to hit, I talked about, and we've already spoken about this a little bit, but just like collecting lanes and thinking about kind of what you collect and the allocation of hobby dollars in that collection. I'm curious, we haven't talked about it. So I want to like maybe learn about it from you. I know you're more of a 90s guy, 90s football guy, but how do you think about your collection? Like kind of what are the lanes? What's the focus?
Yeah, this one got me thinking, and I do have lanes for sure. I've just never really like, you know, put it into an answer on a question like this. But keep in mind, like this is my business. Like sports cards are my business. So I have to separate what I do with cards for business versus personal. And because I get to be so active in this as a business, my approach is different than if I worked somewhere else and just collected cards on the side. So like money is a very important variable for me in this, whereas it might not be for somebody that doesn't do this as a business. And the cards going up in value is a very important variable for me. So I have lanes of more like what I call, like I would call one lane is like my deep PC, which is like, those are cards that if I hold on to them forever, I'm okay with that. Like I would like for them to go up in value and be able to sell money for my business. But if that doesn't happen, there are cards that I would enjoy holding. And those are like, it's a small percentage of my collection because, again, this is a business. So I have to be very profit conscious with the purchases I make. Honestly, I have like, guys can move into the deep PC from the other two lanes. I'll talk about, so the deep PC is probably like less than 10% of what I own. And it can fluctuate. Sometimes it's 3%, sometimes it's 10%. The next level I would call my PC investments. So this is kind of like a floating level, right? So these cards can go into my deep PC if time goes on and I'm like, there's not really much money to be had, but I really like these cards. So I'm just going to keep them. I'm going to put them in the deep PC. Or, you know, if they skyrocket in value, something kind of unforeseen happens and they just, you know, become worth a lot more money, I'm most likely going to sell those if I see an opportunity to maybe buy them back later if I really want them. I would say like 25% of my cards around that are those type of cards. And the rest, like probably 65% around that percent are more like I'm buying these cards to try to make money at some point. Now with all of these cards, it's almost always 90s football, early 2000s football. Like I buy some, like most of my deep PC right now is Michael Porter Jr. because I'm just like, I have a connection with him. I'm starting to buy him again because his cards are really, really cheap. And I can totally justify buying a Prism Parallel out of 99 for like $200. Like I can do that. That used to be like a $5,000 card for some reason. And then, you know, if something happens, if he gets traded to another team and his cards go nuclear, maybe I'll sell it. Probably not him. But like those are the type of guys that would end up in my deep PC. But the rest of the guys I'm buying, like it's guys I love. It's Jerry Rice, Barry Sanders, all those guys from the 90s, early 2000s, where I love the card. I love the player. and I'll buy them and kind of sit them there and just see what they do. And depending on where they go with value is kind of where they end up in my collection.
So maybe a final question on this topic would be there in order for no matter where this is what I gathered, and I just want to play it back and get your kind of confirmation or say this is totally wrong. But what I heard from you is that you've got these lanes, but no matter what, like the cards that you're buying, wherever they fall in those lanes, you have like some affinity towards those types of cards or those types of players in order for them to like enter your collection. And then once they're in the collection, you kind of put them in these different categories. But always, at the end of the day, you're not buying stuff you don't necessarily don't care about, but think you can make money on.
100% always. Like I don't buy like, I don't even know, like Tyrese Maxey. I don't buy him. He's a great player and he could do a lot of special things, but I have no interest in him personally or his cards. I don't buy him. Even if I thought I could make a bunch of money on him, I wouldn't buy his cards because I look at it as like, if I'm going to end up with this forever, I want it to be something I have an attachment to. Right. So it's always going to be, you know, whether it's the player, the card specifically, or both, I have to have an attachment to it to where if I do end up with it forever, I'll be okay with that.
I love it. I think episode one, we visited the next topic, but I'm curious, like it, time has gone by and I feel like I always want to, we talk mostly about auction stuff, but want to bring consignment, like the business side of the consignment space. You're having a lot of conversations. You're working with new clients, existing clients. Is there anything that you hear or as a new theme or existing theme that has been like maybe a misconception about just like consignment in general that you want to bring up on this? Curious. I know we talked about it kind of episode one, but is there anything else you want to touch on?
Yeah, for sure. I'm glad you brought it up because now that I'm with PWCC and I sell everything through them, I'm not with them. I consign everything through PWCC though. To be specific there. One of the very common misconceptions is that auction houses only do well with big cards. PWCC specifically, you know, in my case is what people say, like, I'll send you my cards over, you know, over 5,000, over 3,000, whatever it might be. But honestly, like the cards in the $100 to $1,000 range are crushing it with us right now. And so I wanted to get some actual data and not just like go off of feel. But this didn't surprise me because I felt this, but I'm glad I have some data. So I looked at the cards that ended last night with us. So it would be Sunday. This won't come out till Thursday. We had 34 cards end in the $100 to $1,000 range. I went back and comped all of them to like all the recent sales just to see how they stacked up, just out of curiosity. So
doing the work for the people.
Real numbers. And of course I use Card Ladder for this research. So only 11 of those 34 had like similar comps where it was like, okay, this is a PSA 8 of this card. Like I'm not going to comp it to a PSA 9 or a PSA 7. Like if it didn't have another PSA 8 sale within the last like, you know, 6 to 10 months, I just scratched it. I didn't even look at it. So only 11 of those 34 actually had recent comps that were of the same card, same grade. 10 of our 11 cards did better than anywhere else, eBay specifically. The one that didn't did the same. It was the Joe Burrow Base Prism PSA 10. I think ours did like 156. They sell for like right around 150 pretty much all the time. So it was basically just right there for what they always sell for. So of those 11 cards, they sold for $3,840. And ours sold for $1,226 more than the same cards on eBay, which is 32% more than the same card sold on eBay within the last 6 to 10 months, which is insane. And it doesn't happen like that every single week. Like type of card matters. Like there's a lot of variables, but it was reassuring to know like, wait, almost every single one of our cards in those quote unquote low value ranges actually crushed eBay and sort of justifies and kind of debunks that like PWCC can't sell lower end cards. It's honestly just not the case. And plus we pay out way more than any other eBay consignor under 1,000. Like you won't find an eBay consignor that pays out as high as we do on cards under $1,000.
I love it. I love that. I was not expecting that sort of information from the question, but you, You went in it deep and presented some evidence. I think that's super cool. And like, here's the fact of the matter. Like, there are so many different options and so many different ways to sell cards. I think my whole goal, and like, I think one of the goals I hope for you as we're doing this is just like bringing awareness that what is real and what is not. And you just presented like what's actually happening with data. And I just think there's so many misconceptions about like how we should be thinking about selling our cards that are out there. And anything we can do to just like share some real information is always beneficial to the listener and the collector out there who's spending your hard earned money to not only sell your cards, but, you know, buy cards as well.
100%. I think this space is, we hold on to old truths for a really long time. And I get that. It probably happens in other spaces, but like, I mean, we're three or four years into PWCC being by itself. And there's some people that don't even know PWCC doesn't sell only on eBay anymore. Like that's just how people are trained to say like, no, sports cards are eBay, but it's just not the case. And I think what I always tell people is just try us and you will know firsthand. If you hate it, go back to wherever you went to. But like most people that use us continue to come back for the reasons for how well their cards sell, but also for the overall service they get and then the very strong payouts that they get.
It seems like this is a really good time to just like tee up the offer, because I know you're working on a new offer. So why don't you share with the listeners kind of what your new promotion that you're putting out, and then we'll talk about the world of sports and what's going on.
Yeah. So we had the Stacking 50 promo, which was $50 off your first consignment with us. If you mention the Stacking 50 promo, we are going to do away with that now. And we are going to do the Stacking 93 promo, which is a one-time use. It doesn't matter if it's your first consignment or your 10th consignment with us. It's a one-time use. Mention the Stacking 93 promo on our submission form on our website, and you will get 93% of the total sale on every single card that you send in for that one consignment. If it's a less than $50 card, we have to take an extra $5 off that just because of the fee structure there. But everything over $50, if it's a $75 card, you'll get 93%. If it's a $50,000 card, you'll get 93%, and everything in between. So again, you're not going to find that, especially for under $1,000. You're not going to find anything that comes close to 93%.
Hell of a deal. Everyone hop on it. Check out Nick's service. I'm constantly sending Nick cards Nick to sell, and enjoying the results that I'm getting. Let's talk about maybe golf. This is what I got, man. This is what I got. I'm the definition of a golf casual, but obviously like did some education and tried to understand what was going on before the Masters, and, you know, saw the odds, Scotty Scheffler, where he was at. And then just like watching him like do what he did, you know, with a new baby on the way, just mental strength, get it done, win his second Masters in 3 years. I like, as I'm watching this, I had a comp in my head the whole time. I'm just like, this guy's like Patrick Mahomes, man. Like, this is like Mahomes right now. It's like all the expectations, all the weight on his shoulders, and he's just plowing through and winning the most important trophy. And so that was my takeaway from what I saw. I don't think it was like the most exciting Masters ever, but to me, like the golf superstar has arrived, and I think his name is Scotty Scheffler. What about you?
Yeah, 100%, man. It's interesting that you use that Mahomes comp for a few reasons. Golf is one of those sports where the more you watch it, the more you appreciate like the mundane of it, if that makes sense. And most people are casual fans, and I get it. Like I understand why. It's like it's a long sport. Like you have to set aside a lot of time to watch like a whole tournament. But the mundane of it, so like Scheffler was dominating the tournament. So that last day was kind of boring because he was dominating everybody, but he was still being, you know, aggressive and not just playing for the lead. He had a couple late birdies there that kind of like took him away from those chasing him. But he is a super just like consistent and just good at everything golfer. He's not like I'm going to hit it 400 off the tee and then just that's what puts me ahead of everybody is I'm playing the short game from then on. It's like, no, he's a great driver, a great mid-range player, great around the green, a really good putter. Like, he's just really good at everything. If you watch him enough for the last few years, you've seen him polish areas of his game, specifically mentally. Like, there's been so many times in the last 3 years where he's been the leader going into the weekend or going into Sunday and just has these silly mental lapses that lose him a few strokes, and he loses by 1 to 3 strokes on tournaments he should have won. And he's 27 now. He's kind of maturing into that mental side of the game and closing out tournaments like this where he's the favorite. But he was the betting favorite, but also like you said with Mahomes, people are like, there's no way he's going to win it again. So like, I'm going to bet everybody else because there's no chance. The odds of somebody else winning are much greater than him winning again. And here he goes and just, dominates the tournament, wins it again, second green jacket in 3 years. He's only played in 5 Masters and he's won 2 of them. He's won 3 tournaments this year. His master stats, like the whole like 2 and 3 years and 2 and 5 starts, only like 4 dudes have done both of those, and both lists have Tiger Woods, Jack Nicklaus, and then like one other guy on each list that most people wouldn't even remember, and I actually don't even remember their names, but super short list for what he did. But the other reason that is interesting, you brought up Mahomes, Scheffler only has 1 golf card, and it's not even a licensed card. It's an SI for kids, and it's from 2017, coincidentally enough. But I think that's what is really holding golf cards back is like, I didn't get to listen to your last episode yet with about golf cards with Mike. I need to listen to that. So I don't know if you talked about this, but the licensing for golfers for cards is like really, it's crazy. Like the card manufacturers have to negotiate with each individual golfer what they're going to pay them to make their cards, which is why they don't make them, because Tiger's, I think he still has an exclusive with Upper Deck. I'm not sure. That might not be right now. But he did forever. So it's like the companies were like, well, if we can't even get Tiger, why are we going to go, negotiate against ourselves with every individual golfer and then make a product that, is way down here on the list of cards that people want. So there's just not that much golf product. It just doesn't get made. And Scheffler isn't in any of it, which is kind of crazy. You have the best golfer in the world right now and you can't even buy his card. So I do think that's what holds golf cards back. Now, in older golf cards from going to a new level.
Yeah, I love all the points you touched on. If you're looking for more information on golf cards, check out that Friday episode with Mike from Fondling Cardboard Golf Podcast. Before we move on, let's touch on the NBA playoffs. We've got the play-in still happening, but man, more than any, like looking at the slate, I'm like, does the seeds really matter? Like, I feel like, especially in the East, it feels like just anything could happen.
Dude, what happened? Like, how did the Knicks get the 2 seed and out of nowhere? The Bucks went 3-7 in their last 10 games. And the Knicks just snuck in there and grabbed the 2 seed. Now the Pacers have the Bucks in the first round.
So I'm watching the game. My daughter and my wife actually were at the Pacers game, the Hawks game, because my niece was dancing before the game. So I'm at home with the little one. I'm watching the game. And like, I'm like looking at the line and like, I think the Pacers were like 14.5-point favorites against the Hawks. I'm like, Pacers, like we lost a heartbreaker on Friday night at Cleveland to be able to wrap it up. It was just, we didn't play our best, but the Pacers have been really good at bouncing back after a tough loss this year. But again, it was like so much was on the line for that Sunday game. I was like so nervous. And the Pacers just like literally came out and, scored 150 plus points in that game. It was nuts. But then, so they won and I'm like, 6 seed, let's go, like back in the playoffs, which the 6 seed, like you avoid the Boston side if you can continue to win, which is important this year. And then I'm looking down at my phone and the Bulls and the Knicks go into overtime, which has massive implications for what happens with the Pacers game. So then it falls out that it's going to be Pacers Bucks because the Knicks won and the Bucks lost. And you want to talk about drama. You want to talk about storyline. That's the matchup everyone wants to see. Now, I had no idea we'd see it in round 1. And the scary part for me as a Pacers fan right now, it just seems like the trendy pick is the Pacers because of how down the Bucks have been. I'm like, I know Doc Rivers hasn't been great, but like, I'm convinced Giannis will be back. He'll be fine. Giannis and Dame, it's not an easy matchup, but there's some history there this season. The Pacers have been really successful against the Bucks. My expectation isn't the Pacers are going to win. I want to make that clear to everyone. My expectation going into this year was let's just make the playoffs. It's been a while. We're still a young team. We're really fun, but yeah, I'm not coming on here saying the Pacers are going to beat the Bucks, but I think it's going to be an awful fun series, and I think it's a huge milestone for this new era of Pacers that we've been in the doldrums for a while. Got Halliburton, got Siakam, we've got a good bench, we got a lot of good role players, we got a good coach, so it should be fun.
Yeah, I mean, they're continuing to build, which is all you want with a young team like that. And I mean, look what's ahead of them. Like, the Magic are the 5, the Cavs are the 4, the Knicks are the 2. Like, why can't they catch those teams next year? You know what I mean? Like, you got the Sixers that, you know, fully healthy are probably going to be a top 3 seed on most years. But why can't they be fighting for a top 3 seed next year? I don't see why if they're fully healthy. So
I would not want to play Philadelphia. I'll tell you that.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's an interesting play-in game. I mean, they can both make it, but the Sixers and Heat play in that first play-in game, which is nuts. But the loser of that game, if they win the next one, then I think they still make it as the 8 seed, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, how about the fact that it could be Miami, Boston, and Miami's the team that's given Boston fits? I know it's two different. It's a new year or whatever, but if I'm a Boston fan, I know Boston's like the elite of the East and the elite of the league, but I'm not sure I want to play Miami.
Yeah, or I mean, I wouldn't want to play Philly either, not in the first round at least. That's a tough matchup. So you had some drama with the Pacers. How about my Nuggets, man? They played the T-Wolves they had 3 games left in the season. The T-Wolves on the docket at home for the number 1 seed. Nuggets just dominate them late in the game, win that game. They're the number 1 seed. All they have to do is beat the lowly Spurs and the lowly Grizzlies to close out the season and get the 1 seed. And they lose the next game to the Spurs on a ridiculous buzzer beater floater. In classic Nuggets style, just like not getting up for bad teams, beat the Grizzlies in the last game, squeeze into the 2 seed somehow. But it actually worked out really well, because if the 1 and 2 seed doesn't really matter in the West, like, you're going to either play probably the Warriors or the Lakers, which is like, honestly, neither of those teams really scare me in the first round. I didn't want the Nuggets to play the Suns in the first round. That's what I was worried about. I didn't want the like 3-6 or 2-7 to be against the Suns, because that team has so much. Like, we struggle with their offensive firepower. I think we'd beat them in a series. I think we'd beat them in a series. It just wouldn't be a fun series to play. But I think the betting odds are super interesting for the seedings. Like, the Oklahoma City are the 1 seed in the West, and they are the fifth best favorite to win it all, which is insane. The Clippers are the 3rd best. So it's Celtics are the favorite, then the Nuggets, then the Clippers, and the Bucks have the same odds. And then it's the Thunder. Which I think is super interesting. And like, I would be shocked if the Thunder got through the second round. I wouldn't be shocked if they lost in the first round, honestly. Great team, great young team. They haven't taken their lumps yet. You got to take your lumps first in the playoffs before you can really like work your way through. But on the topic of odds, the Knicks are the 2nd seed in the East. They are 11th favorite to win it up. The Lakers have the same odds as the Knicks to win it all. And the Lakers are in the play-in game, which is absolutely insane. I just thought it was interesting to look at those odds after we saw the actual seeds for the playoffs.
Oh, man, it is. It's going to be fun. We're going to be talking about it next week. For sure. All right, let's move over. No recent comms. Something from the newsletter that you want to go deeper on in the show.
Yeah, so I know we're getting long already, so I'll try to.
Yeah, we are. Let's hit this section hard so we can then get into the cards. So we're not making people fall asleep at the wheel. But
yeah, so I'll be quick with this. So if my numbers are off, it's just bear with me. You can look them up yourself. But the featured card for this week was the 1997 Bowman Chrome Refractor Ken Griffey Jr. PSA 10. Just the base refractor is a pop 1. So I went into like, how important top one refractors, just base refractors, not serial number refractors are, like, does it matter? Does it not? Check out the newsletter if you can. Like, I went in there and really compared like gem rates from like significant first refractors from the 90s for Griffey, and how crazy low the 97 Bowman Chrome refractor PSA 10 gem rate is. Super interesting stuff. It actually sold last night, and I'm going to get these numbers wrong because I didn't look them up and write it down like I should have. It did around $2,300. The PSA 9s do like $200. It was like a 10x multiplier for that one PSA 10. So I thought that was super interesting, and we don't have to get deep into it, but like, I mean, does that matter to you? Is it like a flex? I think it probably is to have like the pop one on an early refractor like that. And by the way, 97 Bowman Chrome was the first year of a standalone Bowman Chrome baseball. So it is an important set.
It's nice, but I always then anticipate somebody I know coming through like, you know, a month later and being like screwing up the whole thing. Like, yeah. So it's like maybe for a moment, but I don't put too much weight into it.
Especially when it's like I could get the nine for, you know, 1/10 of the price. Like,
yeah, I'm not paying the premium.
That's probably okay. Yeah, I think it's super interesting. I can see both sides, like, but like you said, you're kind of you know, you're putting yourself out there in a vulnerable position, hoping that that pop one sticks.
100%. Okay, so let's see here. Maybe what's the no recent comps card that sold this week that you want to talk about?
Yeah, so this is the 98 Brett Favre Skybox Premium Star Rubies out of 50 BGS 8.5. Sold on eBay for $2,560. The last sale of this card, this exact copy, was in May of 22 for $3,500. So it went down 27% in 2 years. Thought it was interesting. Again, I like to highlight cards that go down too. I don't want people to think like, oh, if this hasn't sold for a while, it's going to go up no matter what. That's not the case. I think it's important to know who's buying and selling these cards. And if you lose, you know, the top buyer on a specific card and that card sells again and no new interest comes into that card or player, like the price is going to go down. And I think that's what we saw on that specific card.
All right, let's get into our cards. First card we're talking about, I went NBA heavy on my picks this week because of the playoffs. But this card's on eBay. It's the 2018-19 Contenders Optic Jalen Brunson rookie ticket auto gold out of 10. Ends Thursday. It's on eBay. It has 10 bids. It's currently at $1,150. And part of the reason why, there's a few reasons why I picked this card, right? Jalen Brunson's probably going to make All-NBA second team. He's had a remarkable close to his season. And I think about this card, on-card autograph. Contenders Optic isn't necessarily a product that I'm about or after, but I thought about this card. I thought about the on-card auto, and then also like thinking about like Knicks fans and collectors. It is probably getting to that point with that fan base, if they haven't already, where it's like, all right, now is the time based on this guy doing what he's done for, you know, over a year, that I need to start buying some Jalen Brunson cards. So I think Jalen Brunson just in general has exceeded my expectations for what he has done in New York. It's also insane that you had Jalen Brunson, a rookie, Luka Doncic, a rookie in Dallas at the same time, which is another wild thing to talk about. But yeah, I think Jalen Brunson's a really fun player. He's a guy who I think he's shooting like 40% from the 3-point line. I'm not sure. Like, I know the Knicks have holes, but like this guy's a gamer and I'm not sure I'd want to see him, especially round one.
I love it, man. Like, I love how much success he's had. I don't think anybody anticipated him being where he is today when he came into the league. I mean, you're talking about not a big point guard. I mean, he's strong. Like, he's built for a point guard, but he's not a tall point guard. He's not athletic. Like, he's not super bouncy. He's just a super smooth, under control, kind of finesse and then good shooting player. Like, just knows how to play the game. He is a coach's son. So I think that reflects in his game. And let's give Tom Thibodeau some respect, man. I think that Knicks team is like, just, it's just built exactly like those D-Rose Bulls teams that made long runs Everybody plays like 47 of the 48 minutes, like, and then like one or two people come off the bench. They're all like hard-nosed dudes. Their point guard is their best scorer. Like, I think that team reflects those D-Rose Bulls teams a lot. It's a team you don't want to play in the playoffs, but it's also hard to imagine them actually like winning a championship with a roster that's kind of doesn't go deep and it kind of lacks overall talent. But tons of respect for that Knicks team, tons of respect for Brunson, and that's a sweet card too.
Yes. Next card for me is another young gun in the playoffs, and this is the 2020 Anthony Edwards NT RPA out of 99 PSA 9 on eBay, ends Sunday. I'm not a big NT guy. I'm not a big NT RPA guy, but like this patch looks super cool. His autograph looks really good. I can pick a team to watch and a player to watch in the playoffs outside of my Pacers. Like, I'm probably picking Minnesota. I love watching Anthony Edwards. He and Kat's first game out, we had the unfortunate pleasure of playing the Timberwolves, and we clawed our way back, and I thought we were going to win the damn game, and Anthony Edwards just came out of nowhere and just block of the century. This guy's tendencies and his just – he's fun. This is a card, not for me, I know are for a lot of collectors. People appreciate the NTRPA. And I just saw this hit my feet and it kind of stopped me in my tracks. And I was like, man, like, this is the card for a lot of Anthony Edwards collectors, and it's available come playoff time. So Suns, Timberwolves, going to be an exciting matchup. But wanted to make sure I got a moment, because I don't think we've talked about him too much, to talk about Anthony Edwards and how great I think he is.
Real quick, I can't see the card on my screen, so I don't know if it's a screen sharing thing, but I'm going to talk. You mess with it. But I think the Wolves, I hate the Wolves as a Nuggets fan, because they are a team that matches up well with the Nuggets. And Anthony, I mean, our old GM is their GM now, so naturally he built that team to beat the Nuggets. But there it is. I love watching Anthony Edwards play when he doesn't play the Nuggets. He's super exciting. Like, he just is like a kid just like having fun, and he just happens to be really good. Like, I don't feel like he even feels pressure, because he just seems like he's out there just hooping, like literally just hooping, and then like it all falls into place. But super fun player to watch. That's going to be a really cool first round matchup. Like, those teams are so different from each other. I like the Wolves in that matchup. I just think they match up well with the Suns. They can give them some different looks. I bet the Suns are going to go small a lot and try to get Gobert off the floor whenever they can. And that turns the Wolves into a little bit different team, but they've kind of built their roster to play stretches like that. And that's when Anthony Edwards is going to have to take over. Here's what I expect from Ant. I expect 2 to 3 monster games in the first round, and I expect 1 to 2 complete duds in the first round. That's just like his
young players.
Yeah, young players, exactly. But I think I'm interested to see if he takes that kind of next leap with this being his second, I don't know if this is second playoffs or third, because they won that like that playing game or something. I don't remember when that was, but I know they lost to the Nuggets in the first round last year. Now they're the 3 seed. So it'll be interesting to see if he takes, you know, a playoff leap.
The Wolves go as far as Anthony Edwards goes. And I think personally, if he is able to will them and has a magical run, I'm not sure there's another player's cards who can be impacted as positively as Anthony. I know his cards aren't cheap. I'm not here to like sugarcoat it, but he possesses all of the qualities when it comes to collecting a player, an exciting player. And it just seems like he's not even anywhere close to his full potential. Yeah. So I love watching this kid. He's a ton of fun and an awesome card as well. All right. So we're going old school with this one. I just thought this was sick, so I was like, let's talk about it. This is on PWCC, ends in the weekly auction. It's a 2013 Flawless Emerald Pete Maravich out of 3 PSA 10 to boot patch. I mean, an old school Pete Maravich Celtics patch from the Flawless product. I don't know, man. Outside of just like this thing looking really, really amazing, that was the reason why I picked it. We're so used to seeing like Maravich rookies vintage cards, and this is one I just wanted to highlight for all the patch collectors out there. I think it's super cool.
I love it, man. This is actually one of our consignments. So
there we go.
But yeah, it's like this card came in, and then we also have so we have another 2007 Upper Deck Black 1/1 Pete Maravich. That's a game used patches. It's like a quad window. And then we have a 2016 Flawless Wilt Chamberlain game used patch. And I'm like, dude, these are like old jerseys.
Yeah.
Ended up in these 2010 products. Like this seems huge to me. And surprisingly, they're relatively affordable for what, like, I would have thought this would be like a $7,000 card. It is not a $7,000 card. It's a lot cheaper. Same with the Wilt. It's like, you know, $1,000 card, maybe depending on the grade, which is insane to me. So definitely one worth checking out.
All right, moving on to yours here. This guy's this guy has a collector base. I know that.
Yes. Yes. Shout out to, PK32 Sports Cards.
PK loves him some Fred Taylor.
Loves him some Fred Taylor. So I promised him at some point I would get Fred Taylor a shout out on the pod or the newsletter. So here we are. This is the 99 Skybox Premium 2000, man. This is out of 100. And this is the Fred Taylor. This is the jambalaya of football, as football card collectors say. It's kind of got the same cut as the jambalaya from basketball, similar kind of scopish design. And then Fred Taylor, I think, was just an underappreciated back, probably, you know, because he didn't get to play on a team that was contending for Super Bowls every year. But really good career, is up there on a lot of the all-time stats. And this is a card that has this insert has a lot of collectors of it. It's a very popular insert among football collectors. And the Fred Taylor will probably go for a pretty affordable price. So definitely a cool one to look at if you don't know about it. And if you do, it could be a cool one to add to your collection for a very affordable price.
Such a Colts killer. He had his best games against the Colts always, but I love seeing his cards. Next one.
Yeah, so this is the 96 Select Certified Mir Gold. We talked about the importance of this set before. This is the Jaromir Jagr. So we're going hockey here. It's a PSA 9. This has the protective film on it. You can see it says there, which is really cool. A couple things stand out to me about this. I actually included the Lemieux PSA 9 of this in my No Recent Comps newsletter. It also ends this week. The Jagr ends Saturday. The Lemieux ends Thursday, the day that this podcast will drop. These cards never surface, which is significant, but I also thought it was really cool to see where these came from. And the complete set of these sold on Golden like a couple months ago. And it looks like this person is just picking them apart and selling them individually. I love following that stuff to see like where the sales end up and what sells for more. So something to keep an eye on there. But this card itself, just standalone, regardless of everything I just said, super important set. The first year of the rainbow parallels that we saw in the hobby, and it's a PSA 9 high grade. And this will be a few hundred bucks, which is super affordable for a card like this.
When I think of 90s hockey, obviously your mind goes to Gretzky and Lemieux. But man, Jagr's not too far behind. This guy was, as a casual hockey guy growing up, he was always one of those guys that was top of mind for me.
And he's still playing. He's like 65 years old. He's still playing.
Oh, here's a pretty one.
This one's for you. The next two are for you. This is the 99 Skybox Premium Star Rubies out of 30, Marvin Harrison PSA 8. So this is the third. His third rubies. He has a 97 for sure. So this is his third rubies, but it's the most limited. This year's out of 30. The 97 and 98 are both out of 50. Generally, the least desirable of the three. People love that 97, and a lot of people like the 98 as well. PSA 8 sold recently for, I want to say, like $400 or $500. So just curious to see where this 8 goes for. And honestly, like, I want to get your opinion. Maybe I'm thinking of this too deeply, but I think Marvin Harrison Sr., I think he could sneak up on us with the success of Marvin Harrison Jr. potentially in the NFL. I think it could get people thinking like, wait, how good was his dad? Oh, wait, his dad was really freaking good and his cards are actually pretty affordable for the most part. I don't know. Am I crazy to think that something could happen there?
Here's a couple things about Marvin. I think just his general nature as a receiver in this era where you had divas and everyone was loud, Marvin was not that. So that was like kind of a knock against like him being kind of like a mainstream star or breakthrough outside of just like being a favorite with Colts fans. You have that. And then you also, it follows you regardless, but when you're playing with an all-time great quarterback like Peyton Manning, there's always that like thing people want to discount him on. Oh, well, he played with Peyton, like whatever. Go to YouTube and just type in Marvin Harrison's best catches. Yeah. This, and I am 100% biased, and I know Jerry Rice is the GOAT receiver. I know that. Randy Moss is Randy Moss. This and that. I've never seen a receiver like Marvin Harrison, from his route running to his speed. He never dropped a damn pass, ever. Like, it was surgical, and it wasn't just because of Peyton. Go watch the film. To answer your question, I think it's possible. I enjoy watching Marvin Harrison Jr., but he's such a different type of receiver than his dad. But I don't know. I hope so. Like, I'm hopeful. Not because I own Harrison cards, but I just think, like, he's a Hall of Famer. He brought me so many freaking great moments as a Colts fan. And I just wish you hear the conversations of Jerry Rice, Randy Moss, Calvin Johnson. It's like, look at the numbers and look at the film. Like, he's right there. So yeah, you're making me a little bit excited as I see this card.
This is exactly what I wanted when I showed this card. You hit all the points, man. And I'm a Jerry Rice guy. I think he's the best to ever play at any position, but he played with Montana and Steve Young, both Hall of Fame quarterbacks, and he doesn't get the knock that Marvin does for some reason. So I hear you on that one, man, especially when you look at the price gaps.
All right, let's hit your cards that are selling through Wharf. And here's a pretty one. Man, this card, I'm looking at the pinstripes. It reminds me of when it was called Conseco Fieldhouse opening, where the Pacers play now, Gainbridge. It reminds me of retirement year, Reggie, but how about this card? Tell the people what you got here.
This is the 98 Fleer Brilliance 24 karat gold out of 24. Reggie Miller, BGS 8.5. Yeah, I mean, I had to get this one in there with Brett being the Pacers guy. Had to get his take on Reggie Miller. But, I mean, we all know the significance of this parallel. The design is just absolutely gorgeous. Only 24 copies. Reggie Miller is a fan favorite and always will be in Indiana. A guy I hated as a Chicago Bulls fan in the 90s. Hated playing those Pacers teams. They were just so, man, the Davis brothers, Rick Smits, like, gosh, I hated those guys. And then Reggie always hit clutch shots against the Bulls. So a guy I hated and can now appreciate now that his career is over. But this card sold in like January on eBay, this exact copy. So I think it's a chance to buy this card at maybe a less than what it sold for recently, and maybe lock it up for good.
Amazing parallel, amazing player. We don't have the time for me to even get started with Reggie, but he's got a damn mural downtown Indianapolis. He's on the side of a freaking building. So he is a legend here and love seeing this card. We got a very relevant player. Joker, what's the card here, Nick?
Yeah, this is the 2015 Revolution Angular Nikola Jokic rookie card, PSA 9. So we've talked about the lack of options with Jokic rookie cards. We've talked about that before, how limited his selection is and how a product like Revolution becomes a lot more important for Jokic in his rookie year. And this is the Angular. So I think, you know, it's just an awareness thing. Like, a lot of these people just don't necessarily know all the parallels from early Revolution or like how rare they are. But if you just go on Card Ladder and look up the pops and sales history on these, like if you type in this card, PSA 9, you can click into the pops right there on Card Ladder. Only 26 have been graded by PSA, and only one PSA 10 exists. So 9 is pretty much your best option. But just the fact that only 26 are graded by PSA shows how limited this is. And there's only 9 graded elsewhere. So you're looking at a total of 35 copies graded for this parallel. So it's pretty rare, really cool design. Like, the Revolution cards look amazing. And it's a Jokic rookie that's probably going to do, I think this sold, a copy of this sold recently for like $275. So super affordable. Look at LeBron's like 900th best base card, and it probably does $1,000 in a PSA 9 condition. So just something to think about with how limited his selection is. He's going to win his third MVP and could add a second title to that. So he's entering a very short list of all-time players.
I'm all about Revolution. This is a sharp-looking card. All right. We've been seeing a lot of Gronk cards in our Instagram feed. So what we've got looks like is rookie card. Talk about this one.
Yeah, I almost didn't include this since we talked about a Gronk card last week. But again, I think this is just a cheap, affordable play on a rare Gronk rookie that, again, like you just don't know about unless you dive into the weeds. So this is the 2010 Topps Chrome catching the ball variation Gronkowski rookie PSA 9. So like the Topps Chrome sets most usually had a base set and then a variation set. And the variation set was always much more short printed, like similar to, I think Prism still does it. I know they did for a long time where they had like an SP variation, except these were way more SP than any Prism card would be today. So just to compare, like the 2010 Topps Chrome, like the base set, the regular card, which is the cutting pose, PSA has graded 1,375 of those cards. There are 849 PSA 9s. The catching the ball variation, PSA has graded 31 of those cards, and there are 16 PSA 9s. So you're talking about 4x the total pop for the one-fourth of the total pop for the variation, and then, gosh, I can't even do that, like 1/15th of the PSA 9 pop for the variation. This should sell for more than the base, the regular base version all day, every day. I think the last copy of this sold for like, I'm going to look it up. I think it sold for like $85 because the picture was like really bad. It sold for $93. That was in June 2023. The last copy before that was a whole year before in June 2022, and it sold for $556. So I also think it's a card like people just don't know what it's worth, but just consider how rare it is. It's from Topps Chrome. It's a rookie and maybe the best tight end of all time.
I was thrown off by it. I knew nothing about this card. I don't know if I've ever seen it before. It was like throwing me off a little bit.
Topps Chrome. Look at a guy like Julio. Julio is from 2011. Look at his base Topps Chrome and his base Topps Chrome variations, and you'll see what I'm talking about too.
We've talked way more about golf cards than I ever thought we would at this point, but here we are again. So what do we got?
We're going to keep the train rolling, man. This is a 2012 SP game used gear, purple out of 10. This is the gloves. So the tour or event worn glove pieces here in the cards, Jack Nicklaus, Tiger Woods, BGS 9. So I think before I talked about how golf cards just have really cool memorabilia cards. This is just an example of that. Like it's actually gloves they wore in a game, in a tournament or in an event, not associated with anything gloves like you see in modern day football cards. And it's the two goats. Like everybody, you know, we talked about it before. Everybody knows Tiger. Everybody knows Jack. It's going to be an affordable price. This is a BGS 9 and there's three of these and none graded higher.
Yeah, just the two of them on the card with some memorabilia. You can't really beat that. I love how Jack Nicklaus is just kind of, he's got the club out. He's just kind of
He looks nice like Mr. Rogers in that, picture.
A lot of Masters between those two guys. Sure. Speaking of Masters. And the final one here, I was just thinking about this guy the other day. And it's like he's almost out of sight, out of mind. And he's a guy I like watching, so I'm excited for him to return. And I don't want to play him, but I'm excited to watch him when he's playing other teams. So what do we got?
I share all the same sentiments. This is the 2021 Select Field Level Tiger Stripe Prism, Joe Burrow, PSA 9. So this is a second-year Burrow Tiger Prism from Select. It's the field level. Just touching on the design, like it just plays so well off of the stripes on the pants and the stripes on the helmet there, the Bengal stripes. Like it just... This is a, if it exists, it is a mascot match. Like we've got the color match, right? If this was called the Bengal Prism, people would just crap themselves. People would go nuts. But it looks exactly the same as like the Bengal stripes on their uniform. So super cool how this card kind of pops with that. It's very short printed. I don't know the numbers on it. It's not serial numbered, but it's very short printed. It's actually sneaky expensive. Like last sale of this was like $2,300. Now that was like a year ago. So I don't know what it'll do now. A lot has changed since then. But like you said, man, I love watching Burrow and when he's not playing the Chiefs, but he plays with so much swagger. Like people are just forgetting about him because he he was injured all year last year and then ended up hanging it up, you know, with a few games left. But they still have a ton of talent. T. Higgins is going to be playing on a contract year. Like, they have a lot to prove to people this year. I would not bet against a guy like Joe Burrow this year. I think he's a great buy right now.
It's an one of my best friends is a Bengals season ticket holder, and to say he's bullish on Joe Burrow and his team is an understatement. So excited for him to get back. I'm excited to dig into football, which I'm sure we'll be doing it more and more. And we actually did a pretty good time. We're done right at the stop because I got to go pick up my children. So well done, Nick. Everyone go check out that new promo code, Stacking93. A link is in the show notes. Go hit that link. Check out the Worf Sports Cards. Nick, always a pleasure, man. Can't wait to do it again.
Thanks, man. This is quickly becoming my favorite time of the week. So can't wait for next week.